My guest is James McCanny, and he's just causing all kinds of trouble. I wasn't ready for that answer, James. You say it as though with some conviction, like they know something's coming, or they're just being prudent, or what?
Well, we saw this machine. It was actually the bit of the tunnel drilling device. It came into Duluth, Minnesota, on an airport, on an aircraft that was the only one in the world that could carry it. It was a Russian built. It had six engines. It looked like a pregnant 747.
Hmm.
And then this was trucked down to Texas, and they wanted to keep it rather quiet, but it's hard to keep something like that quiet.
Well, you're confusing me. What is this? So they're going to build a giant tunnel where they plan to run from Houston and Florida and everywhere and go down into the tunnel when this happens?
Well, this is a tunnel drilling bit. And so this had to go on a very large tunnel drilling machine. And I suspect they were going to use it. It's not on display in a museum somewhere. So
they'll save NASA and save their families?
I suspect.
Are they going to let you in?
No, I haven't gotten my pass yet.
Probably not, huh?
No, but I wouldn't personally want to be in a cave myself. When one of these starts rocking and rolling, the Earth is going to fissure and fracture, and a cave underground is not the place to be. I mean, being up here is not going to be great, but I wouldn't want to be more than a couple shovelfuls of dirt away from the surface.
Hmm. So, would a couple of shovelfuls help you either?
Well, the ancients talk about being in caves.
Yes.
And so... because of the wind and the rain and the severe conditions above ground.
Mm.
But there are also, I've heard tales where people survived by laying in, just in surface regions. So the bottom line is with one of these, I know people have published like safe area maps and all kinds of things.
Oh, I know.
And there is no such thing as a safe area. If you're like at the World Trade Towers, some guy was standing in the middle of the down, right in the lobby downstairs, and he was blown out the doors two blocks away and got up and was uninjured.
All right. There was this special on the Discovery Channel not very long ago. I'm a real devotee of the Discovery Channel. And they showed what would happen if something the size of the rock that killed the dinosaurs supposedly were to hit Earth's atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And what actually happens, James, is that the atmosphere boils. The oceans actually boil completely out of their beds. And that water is taken up into the atmosphere. And then fire spreads around the Earth, igniting sort of the atmosphere. And the temperature on the surface of the Earth approaches that of the sun, or something like that. It was a recent documentary, and it would erase all life down to the microbial level. In fact, down into the Earth quite a long way, and there would only be a sort of a small area between the heat in the center of the Earth and the heat that had been coming from the surface where microbial life could survive to one day emerge and repopulate Earth with life.
Well, we've seen mass extinctions many times on this planet. And we have, for example, salt beds from ancient oceans that are miles underground. So clearly something has happened to this rock here many times in the past. We find the dinosaur beds out in Montana, Wyoming, that area and other parts of the planet that used to be lush tropical fern forests and now are just the driest, most barren place on the planet. So clearly there have been some changes, and something hitting Earth is one option, but I don't think it's the only one or probably the most frequent one. I think these large objects coming through the solar system, the other thing they can do by igniting or discharging the solar capacitors, there's a lot of energy stored there, electrical energy, And we've seen comets come by the sun before where they snap an electrical discharge off to the sun and boom, out comes a big flare. So comets can discharge the surface fusion in the sun and cause other conditions, so they don't even have to come near Earth to cause some very severe conditions on Earth and the other planets. So there's a whole myriad of things that could happen to the solar system.
Okay, so if you were in charge, instead of being who you are, if you were in some high government position and you actually had to make a decision about whether to tell the people that something like an ELE is coming or to keep your mouth shut, what would you do?
Well, I have developed what I call mega projects, and one of them is to actually, a number of them are to deal with this, where you have small population centers all over the planet, which are locally prepared. Where, you know, it's not like FEMA can come out of Washington and help everybody in the country if something major happens. But this would have to be handled at a local level.
Well, they had a hard time with just New Orleans. So
So
the whole country is going to be a big problem.
Yeah, the whole world. So you have to get people locally to become agrarian. So if they survive, they can come through this and come out the other end. But one of the things I say about people moving into caves is that what are they going to do when they come out of their cave? Eventually, all their food's going to run out, and they're going to have to come out and plant a garden.
Well, see, but you're talking about a NEEL, which would be a near extinction level event.
Right.
Right.
Well,
in other words, some people would live, but I mean,
right.
According to what I saw,
right.
There's a very strong possibility that not even bacteria would survive.
Right. And the other one of my what I call mega projects is to develop space colonies, which literally, I've developed a process for doing this.
Get off the planet.
Get off the planet, and there are certain people who would go for this, and in a colony would probably be, I talk about launching tubes, large carbon fiber tubes with a rocket. I've talked about the water rockets that the Russians used back in the late 80s, early 90s. They were a nuclear-powered water rocket, and they were a steam rocket, basically, but they could get these things into orbit. But launch the tubes, strap them together, build a city like the much like the 2001 Space Odyssey, rotating tire-like or wheel-like city, and then spin these off away from Earth and have them around the solar system. Also, they would need electromagnetic shielding because the comets, when they come through, are going to be zapping everything in sight electrically. So you would need shunts and bypass circuitry, so these electric currents would not damage the...
Just to see the human race survive.
Well,
maybe.
Right.
But what would the human race do? I mean, would there probably be no chance now to reach another habitable planet, so the new home would have to be space itself, wouldn't it?
And that's part of the whole plan of... habitating space rather than waiting 20 years to send one guy to the moon. I think our space program is marching completely down the wrong road. We need more science. I know all the science guys at NASA don't like me, but that's okay. I think we need a lot more science where we're really discovering what's out there, and we need a Russian type of space program, manned space program, where we learn how to live in space and actually live out there. We can't be sending Tang and McDonald's hamburgers out in little packages from Earth. These people have to sustain themselves out there long term. So all of this would be a space program that I would want to see developed. I always said that the Chinese are probably the closest to having such a space program because they got an overabundance of people. They're starting to become spacefaring. And it just takes that one little kind of change in thought where we're not just going to send one guy to orbit the Earth. We're going to send 500,000 people up there. And just like the pioneers that came across in covered wagons, they didn't know how they were going to survive, but they did.
Yeah, well, it would be worth a shot. I mean, if it was actually either that or the true end of this version of the human race.
Right.
Carefully chosen words there.
Great.
I'd love to see him give it a shot. But, you know, we're nowhere near that technology right now, are we?
Well, if we started today, or unfortunately, if we would have started 30 years ago on a program to really live in space instead of sending onesie-twosies up there.
Yeah, you got a point.
I've always said that our space program has been a way for corporations to make money, not to go into space. And I think that's very close to accurate, but we have to change this whole concept of going into space, and I kind of liken it to the surfboard industry, where these guys go out there and get on a surfboard and learn how to ride the waves, and nobody taught them. There was no surfboard school. They just went and did it, and that's the way I see outer space also, and you kind of see this in the entrepreneurial spirit with Branson and the
you see a,
spaceship,
you know,
one
a
guys.
Little bit of it. I you know, it's not at a scale that I'm happy with.
Right.
I we should all be doing it through government. This is one. See, you know, it's I don't like government in much of anything, but in terms of the space program, really only a government has the capacity and the means to do it.
It's really true. So if it becomes misdirected, then everybody loses.
On the kind of scale that we're talking about here, certainly that would be true.
Right. Oh, absolutely. It is a vast project, kind of like building a dam system or a hydroelectric power system and, say, a grid system. All of these things were managed from works projects from the government, and certainly these mega projects are the same type of thing. The only problem that I see is that every time something gets in the government, it becomes profiteering, and who gets the money and the contract, it fails for that reason.
You know, the Catholic Church, Rome, actually, you know, from Rome, they've got this observatory down in Arizona that they blew right through all kinds of environmental obstacles just magically. I guess they can do that from Rome, and they got this observatory built, and I always wondered what the hell they were, you know, what the heck they were looking for.
Right. Well, that telescope is very interesting. In fact, there was a picture of it taken by an astronomer who worked there, was put on Coast to Coast within the last 6 months.
Yeah. What do you think they're looking for?
Well, comets, very specifically. That telescope was designed to look for comets, and it was built during the Hale-Bopp era.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember a guy named Malachi Martin,
who
said that one of his statements was the Vatican wanted to know if Hale-Bopp was wormwood.
Mm-hmm.
And I know personally some of the astronomers who were hired to staff that facility, because they came from the University of Minnesota, and they were comet scientists. A comet telescope is very different from any other brand of telescope.
In what manner? How do we identify that difference?
Well, most telescopes look at planets or galaxies or little things that are somewhat bright far away. A comet is wide, covers a wide area of the sky. It's very diffuse, low light level.
Mm-hmm.
The tracking is totally different because a comet does not follow planetary or sidereal, any other type of orbits.
So then what? You use some version of a very wide angle lens. You're looking at a very great deal of the sky, and that defines a telescope looking at for a comet?
Right. And so you're not trying to get down to one little
pinpoint.
You're trying to get this vast area of the sky, and plus you have spectral analysis points in many areas of your photographic array of the CCD.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, the equipment is totally, totally, totally different than anything else.
So then we know they're looking for comets.
They're looking for comets. Now, what is the Vatican's interest in comets?
Well, that was going to be my question.
Well, I think we know. They are very much looking for these objects that could be of historical record importance. And they know also that there's not just one of these, that there are many. And that's what I keep talking about, is that the many Planet X objects. There's not just one of these. There could be some out there, these dark objects, as you were calling them,
mm-hmm.
that come back every million years or 300,000 years? And how would we have a history of any of this?
I don't know, but, from our point of view as humans, it would only take one.
Great. And there's probably, we've seen comets come through the solar system that are pretty pretty amazing. What was it, 1886 had the Great Comet, they called it. It was seen over Europe, etc. The ancients talk about these. When you see one of these big comets raging from one end of the sky to the other in the daylight sky,
yes,
everybody's going to know that that ain't no little snowball.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Sure.
Well, we think, I guess we've been observing the sky truly scientifically for a relatively short amount of time, actually. But we think we have all these things identified. But see, space lives in millions and billions and trillions of years, while we've only been observing for a little while. So what, I guess what I'm saying is we don't have all of these comets categorized. And what are the chances that one that we haven't heard about before suddenly appears and starts to grow larger and larger, basically headed in our direction?
Well, it appears that that's what happened to the ancients, and they saw that, and it's going to happen again.
Saying is we haven't seen them all come by. We don't have them all categorized at all. This is like a constant sort of barrage, and
right.
So it's not predictable, right?
Yeah, and what is amazing is why astronomers are so adamant about denying that this could ever happen.
I don't get it. I mean, there are some that are in relatively short orbits, I guess, that bring them back around, that we know about those, but then there's some in very long ones that we don't know a thing about yet, right?
Right. Well, the object Sedna is in an orbit which brings it, the closest distance is 3 times the distance to Pluto, and then it goes out to something like 87 times the distance to Pluto. And
I'm talking about a complete intruder, though.
Right. Well, that's just an example.
Yeah, it is.
And what's the probability that when we found Sedna, that's the only one out there? That's the biggest one, or it's the smallest one. If you look at the statistics of, I call it the size distribution of objects, we have grain-sized stuff in the solar system and asteroids and moons and planets, and the bigger you get, the fewer there are, but outside there, that's exactly right. We don't know.
Is a rogue planet possible, a total rogue planet, and by that I mean not captured by any sun or not captured by anything, but rather as a rogue traveling through the universe?
Well, supposedly NASA has discovered some of these. And there, it was actually Frank Drake took this information, the Drake equation, which deals with the statistical probability of life in the universe, and they updated that equation a number of years ago based on that fact, that they were finding these rogue planets.
Last hour, we normally reserve and will this time for people to ask questions, but we've got so much material to get through. James, welcome back.
Hi, Art.
I highlighted where you wrote about Yellowstone in here. There's a lot of people, James, concerned about Yellowstone and think something's going on there. What's going on there?
Well, interestingly enough, this about 2 weeks ago, I believe it was in Nature, the journal geologist from the USGS wrote finally an article saying that, gee, the mound had risen. And of course, they had begun measuring this in 1996, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
There was a woman out there, and she was just monitoring the lake, and it was rising.
Mm-hmm.
And almost like the Hansen event, they kind of muffled this for some time.
They did.
And finally, they posted an article just rather casually saying that, yeah, it's risen and they're looking at it and they don't know anything about it and other than there it is. But the reality is that the lake at Yellowstone has been poisoned up until, a few years ago. There were fish in it and they're all dead. And the bison would roam around the lake. It's a dead lake now.
Yeah, see, I've got to fall back again on discovery. I depend on them. And You know, they had this really cool show. Maybe you saw it. And it showed what would happen if an event at Yellowstone, like one that has occurred there before, were to happen. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's
Right.
like an ELE almost.
Right. In the there's in I was driving through eastern Nebraska one time, and I picked up a brochure, and it's this dinosaur bed that they discovered of ash, where the dinosaurs are simply buried in ash, and there's no volcanoes in eastern Nebraska. So it took them a long time to figure out what volcano was responsible for this ash bed that buried these dinosaurs.
Yes.
And it turns out that it was one of the sister volcanoes of the big one that's at Yellowstone. This one was actually, I believe, in Wyoming, probably 500 miles away. And it just showed first of all, the pyroclastic blast that comes off of these probably killed the dinosaurs in that area first, and then as they laid down, the ash fell on top of them and
Right.
basically encapsulated them, dried them out, so they were perfectly preserved up to today, millions, hundreds, you know what, 50 million years later. But the big caldera in Yellowstone has gone off in the past.
Okay, what the average person, I guess, wants to know is, I mean, I remember when the volcano in the Northwest went bulge and very little warning, and then kaboom, off she went. How much do we know about the caldera there at Yellowstone? And in other words, how much bulging can it take, does anybody know, before it goes kaboom?
Well, that's the thing. They just simply don't know. And of course, geologists always take the conservative. It's kind of like the Planet X thing. They don't want to say anything that alarms the public, and that's a general policy.
Well, I don't know if I want to be alarmed, but I do want to know the truth. I mean,
Right.
and so the truth is they really don't know, or they don't want to tell us.
Well, volcanoes are hard to predict. And like I'm monitoring one right now in the Popocatepetl, which is outside of Mexico City, and it could just go wham someday, or it typically though they'll go in rhythms, and they'll start almost like a birthing process where they start in a rhythm, and then it gets the patterns get shorter, and all of a sudden then you start getting the rumbling under the volcano, and then it goes, but they don't always do that.
Yeah, well, I think of Coke cans. I mean, if you pick up a Coke can and it's all bloated out, well, you just know if you pop the top on that, you're going to
Yep.
get drenched, right?
That's right. That's
So
right.
it's like the bloated out Coke can, see? And I'm just wondering, there must be somebody who has measurements who can tell us, look, it has this much stress right now, and if it gets that much, it's going to blow up.
Well, there's different kinds of blowing up. There's the shield volcanoes, which just ooze, like the Hawaiian Pacific volcanoes.
Good point.
But this one, according to the USGS own numbers, is overdue by about a few 100,000 years to go off. But there are two major things that cause volcanoes to blow. One is sulfur, high sulfur content, and we know that the Yellowstone Basin has a very high sulfur content. The other thing that makes them go off the top is water. And that's one of the mega projects that I've defined that the Earth really needs. We have to drain the water out of the basin in the caldera at Yellowstone. Because if you took that amount of water and turned it into steam, if that were to drain down into a fissure, we know that when that bulge is occurring, it's not due to lava, it's due to gases. So if that were to break and the lake would fall down into that chasm and hit the magma and blow, and you turn, you know what steam will do, it would be one of the largest volcanoes the Earth has ever seen in any kind of geological history.
And for the states adjacent to this event?
Well, it wouldn't last long because the steam and the just the how fast that would turn to steam and blow the material all over the place, it would just be a huge mess. So we can't do anything about the sulfur content. That's locked in the ground. But what we can do is drain that water out of there. And there's a natural path out the southeast arm of the lake.
And if they drain the water, you think that will at least prevent the steam part of it?
Right. And the other part of it is the lake is becoming poisoned. So you want to get that water out of there while it's still relatively fresh water.
But
If
if
it
they
be
started draining that lake, don't you think that reporters would say, "Hey, why are you draining that lake?"
Well, it would have to be something that moving water is a big issue. But once it becomes poisoned and obviously dead
Yeah.
in a few year period, you have a problem.
Well, yeah,
And
obviously. But I mean, again, wouldn't reporters say, "Hey, why are you draining that lake?"
right. Oh, and the
And
answer would be
would be what?
that we have to move that water out of there to prevent the case of it falling down into a breach in like this one of these air bubbles, which we know are under that region. And that's where the bulge is. The bulge is right under the lake.
Right, but wouldn't that be this big tip-off that, something potentially really bad is about to happen, is what I guess I was getting at
Well,
right there.
yeah, and there again, I don't think you'd get government agencies to spring on this idea. They would balk until the cows come home. But
Yes.
it has to be done. And that's why we get into this realm of politics. Maybe that's why the Hansen incident is so valuable, because it tells you what's going on in other areas of science, geology and planetary science.
Well, that's if that's true, it's extremely sad.
And can we allow government agencies to be in control of these when they have political agendas to not scare the people or to say things that are politically correct? A volcano going off in the western U.S. isn't exactly a politically correct statement. Or
Well, I mean, for example, last night on 60 Minutes, they pointed out that one of the Democrat administrations tried to pressure Hansen into saying that it was actually worse than it was at that time, and he wouldn't do that either. I just thought I'd throw that in for balance. So agendas, yes, they seem to carry the day, don't they?
Right, and it's unfortunate when scientists. The other unfortunate thing is hard to get a group of scientists in a room and have them all agree.
That's for sure.
The global warming issue. I've always tried to insert a few things in there. One is that they are measuring temperature rise, which is not the equivalent of heat content rise. I use the example of if you take two boxes, same size, you fill them full of gaseous material, but you say put more water vapor in one, you can have a lower temperature in the box without the water vapor, but more heat content. If you have the lower temperature in the box with water content, you can actually have more heat content in that box,
Okay.
even though it's at a lower temperature. So temperature is not an indicator of heat content, and the greenhouse global warming scientists are using them interchangeably, and it's a totally scientifically incorrect comparison. It's too difficult for them to measure true heat content, because that would re require the knowing the atmospheric components like water, which holds a lot of heat.
Back to water for a second,
Yeah.
because I'm not done with this Yellowstone thing.
Right.
I guess I want to understand if the lake fell into the broken bulge. I really do want to know what would occur in the surrounding states and to what distance this would occur. Can
Well,
you estimate even?
it's hard to estimate, but we've seen very small lakes like this. For example, Mount St. Helens, let's take a good example of a volcano that blew due
Okay.
to both water and sulfur.
Yes.
There was probably a chasm underground that when that rumbling was going on, the breaks and the fissures were occurring, and water probably from a freshwater underground reservoir dumped down into the chasm, and that's what took the top of Mount St. Helens off. And you saw it took the top third of that mountain off in a matter of seconds and blew it 60 miles in the sky. The same thing with Krakatoa.
But the thing about Yellowstone is you've got written down here that it would be the perhaps biggest volcanic eruption the Earth has seen in 50 million years. Now that 50 million years, that seems like a really big explosion.
that is a big explosion. So around the surrounding states, the answer to your question is,
yes,
it would blow material into that 50-state or that probably 10-state region, completely surrounding the Yellowstone caldera.
And how severe would the consequences of that be for those states?
Well, it would be that would end life as we know it. I don't know if it would kill everybody. One estimate is based on past eruptions of Yellowstone that it extended out about 500 miles.
Wow.
So that means as far as eastern Minnesota. And then, of course, the dust cloud would encircle the globe. When Mount St. Helens went off, they were selling Mount St. Helens dust from New York City,
mm-hmm,
in little vials.
Yes.
That was a relatively small volcano. Now,
a lot of scientists believe that, I guess we know, don't we, that volcanoes actually lower the temperature on Earth because they obscure the sun.
Right.
To a certain degree, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so something the size of Yellowstone, 50 million years apart or so, that would throw up enough dust to probably do what?
Well, we'd go into a mini ice age. There's a good record of one, and I'm trying to think of the...
That would really screw up global warming.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the one that went off in the 1800s, it was well documented. The temperatures all around the world were measured by the British Navy in the 1800s. And I'm trying to think of the name. It's out in the Pacific there. Micronesia area. It might.
Now, do you think that global warming could conceivably get bad enough that somebody would come up with the idea of blowing Yellowstone to cool it off?
I hope not. That would be some mad science.
Well, now, there's some guys at NASA who were talking about changing the Earth's orbit. Had you heard that one?
Well, I did not hear that one. I heard
on,
that they
I
were...
I kid you not. They were going to move the Earth further away from the sun, temporarily,
right,
to deal with global warming. And then at the end of that time, they were going to move it back. And the way they were going to move it was to take something like a giant, I don't know, maybe a comet, some planetary something that's headed in our direction but not close enough, and then insert it in exactly the right passage of Earth to just bump us out of the current orbit by a little bit. And then the idea was to get another rock and put us back in orbit after we had cooled off.
The only problem with that I see is probably what would happen. It wouldn't go out into a farther circular orbit. We would go into an elliptical orbit, so we'd go farther and then closer.
Oh, it's a lunatic-like idea.
I wouldn't like to see somebody doing that.
But it was real. I read the story. They really thought about it.
The one I saw, they were going to... cast material up in outer space, I think fine aluminum particles or something, and it would block the sun and then cause cooling.
Yeah, I bet it would cause a lot of other stuff, too.
I start to play with those kind of things and the side effects and the unknown, like anything when you change nature, five other things that you didn't expect happen.
Inevitably.
Inevitably.
Yes. This Yellowstone thing, it's bulging. It is, just so we know the current status, is it continuing to get to be a bigger bulge? Is that the current thinking?
Well, there again, they stopped producing the data.
Well, darn.
Somebody is probably aware of the size. I mean, we have GPS. You could drop sensors down there.
But why would they stop the data, James?
Well, the woman, I forget her name, that was publishing this, up to a few years ago, was kind of silenced, and then at that point they had data on the amount that it had risen. But you would think by now they would have a volumetric measurement where you could get exactly a daily measurement, exactly how this has grown. And
one would think.
And somebody's got that data. I bet it exists somewhere. But it didn't show up.
I mean, that's just impossible. If this is really a danger and they're doing specials on Discovery Channel and such about it, And you're telling me they were giving us the data indicating it was bulging, and then the data stopped. That's very troubling, James.
It is. And there again, it's just like the Hansen incident or the issue with the dirty snowball comet model. Science is not science, and it is so controlled and distorted today that you could hardly recognize it as science. Somewhere above, however, I talk about the different tiers of science. Much of what we see today is, I call, tier two science. There are groups of scientists, you don't know their names or you never hear from them, they don't publish, but they have real data and real information, and it does go somewhere.
Not to us.
Not to us.
Did they give any reason why they stopped the data about the caldera bulging there?
Actually, there was a statement.
Really?
And, yeah. And I'm trying to think, but it was basically, we don't want to release this until further analysis because it may alarm the public. And
did they really say that?
I'm just trying to think exactly what it said. So, but that was what I read into it, I guess. But there was actually
they actually didn't quite say that.
Probably not.
It added up to that in your mind, though.
Yeah, it was probably some double talk of some sort. But the reality is that the data simply is no longer available. And we know that data exists. They wouldn't stop measuring that.
You wouldn't think.
No.
Well, that's just remarkable. It would sure be fun to get hold of whatever that memo or document was.